On episode 271 of the Tennis Files podcast, you'll learn why obsession is the key to your tennis success with Coach Peter Freeman.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey there, welcome to another episode of the podcast, and I'm happy to have you on listening because we have a great interview with Coach Peter Freeman. I'm sure many of you know Peter from my podcast episodes with him or seeing him give some great quality instruction on the Tennis Summit. And today we have an episode for you about why obsession is the key to your tennis success. And obsession sometimes can be seen by people as too unhealthy and just too hardcore. And, you know, some players even want to be seen as not giving too much effort to try to look cool and things like that. But we'll break some of these myths down on the episode and talk about things like why you need a healthy obsession for the game, how to develop an inner drive to keep improving, why you'll always have enough time for something if it's important enough to you, the biggest obstacle to staying on track to improve and how to avoid it, how to deal with adversity, how your NTRP rating can actually hurt your development, and much more. And Pete does a lot of great stuff on his YouTube channel at Crunch Time Coaching. He was named the Georgia Pro of the Year. And I'm really excited to announce that Peter is hosting TennisCon 6 coming up very soon. By the time you listen to this, registration will be out or will be open already. So definitely highly encourage you to check it out. And you can go to tennisfiles.com/TennisCon6. That's TennisFiles.com/TennisCon6 and register for free. And there's also an option to get the All Access Pass if you'd like to. But yeah, it's just a fantastic event with a lot of amazing coaches on there, and you'll learn about, you know, all things tennis, and you'll get to improve your game, you know, whether it's fitness, strategy, mental game, etc. So yeah, I'm definitely going to be tuning in as I do every year. And you also want to register too, because then you'll get to see Peter and I do a bunch of live streams together. I think we have 3 that we've scheduled, so that's going to be super fun. And I know Peter's going to do some giveaways as well. So it's all in good fun and learning. So definitely, again, head on to tennisfiles.com/TennisCon6 to register for TennisCon 6. But yeah, with that, I'm really excited to bring you this interview. I think you'll get a lot out of it. Peter always brings out the golden nuggets, if you will, in terms of ways to improve your game. So without further ado, here is my interview with Coach Peter Freeman.
Welcome to another lovely interview with my lovely friend, Peter Freeman. Peter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to be on your podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Always so much fun having you on here. You know, obviously I love interviewing everybody, but, you know, especially when you interview a good friend, it's that much more fun and interesting and free flowing. So great to have you on as always, Peter. And yeah, today we're going to be talking about obsession. You know, this is a topic that we haven't really explored too much on the podcast. So I'm excited to talk about that, as well as, you know, eventually we're going to talk about TennisCon 6, which really, really excited and honored to be a part of that. That's always such an incredible event, such a Herculean effort to put that one together. So definitely you'll want to check that out, and you can go to tennisfiles.com/TennisCon6 and the link will be in the show notes page. So yeah, Peter, let me ask you about that, you know, because you're in the thick of it right now, preparing for TennisCon 6. So how have you been? Have you had any free time? Have you been able to go outside and breathe some fresh air? What's going on?
Well, yeah, actually I had time to breathe some fresh air this morning. I was outside. It was about 7 o'clock in the morning and I was working out.
Nice.
Doing shadow strokes.
Boom.
And footwork drills. Right at our complex here with my buddy B2, who, if you don't know who B2 is, he's my best friend, my dog. So yeah, still going strong, and I'm obsessed just like everybody else obsessed with this wonderful game of tennis.
Love to hear it, Peter. And so am I, or at least my friends tell me. But yeah, let's get into obsession. You know, before this call, or before the recording, rather, we were talking about, you know, that there seems to be kind of even a negative connotation about being obsessed and some misconceptions about it. So you want to start off by talking about that?
Yeah, I think sometimes when we love something so much, we can start to feel self-conscious about it. Sometimes people knowingly or unknowingly can make us feel guilty about it, you know, like, oh, get a life. You ever heard that? Like, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to do that. Oh, go get a life. That's all you think about. That's all you do, you know. But when you really look at people who have just a lifelong passion for something, they're obsessed with it and they get so much rewards out of it, so much enjoyment. They learn a lot about themselves. They're always challenging themselves. Trying to get themselves to the next level. And I think it's a great thing. And really what comes to mind when I think about obsession, maybe the most obsessed person I can think of, besides Rafa Nadal, that's another one that's popped in my head, is Tom Brady. You know, the guy is now 45 years old. I actually look at the way he plays and I'm thinking the last couple of years, the guy's actually getting better, not getting older and worse. He's somehow, to me, looks like he moves faster than he did when he was younger. His arm looks just as strong, and he's able to, perform under extreme pressure. In the game one of this year, he ran a 2-minute drill to lead his team to victory. So, and he's a guy that will watch film all the time. Like, how many football games has he been involved in? And he's still watching film on football. And it's that type of mindset that no matter what you do and what type of level you're at is going to always keep your mind challenged and keep you engaged. And I think that's what's most important, even more than the actual results of winning and losing.
Yeah, 100%, Peter. I mean, I think about the times where I accomplished, you know, the biggest goals that I've had, you know, whether that's, any of the stuff that I do for Tennis Files, or if it's like, you know, like sectionals or, you know, a tournament, and like, it's, you know, I've been obsessed at those moments, you know, I've just been fully engaged and like just trying to study as much as I can and preparing as much as I can. And, you know, that's really kind of the key to success that I've found. You know, obviously there's certain people that, you know, maybe you have to dial a bit back at some points, but I think for the most part, and definitely for me, I think the obsession route has been key to my development in both my career and tennis as well. So, you know, what are some steps to becoming obsessed? Like, what sorts of things do we want to do? Because that seems like, again, it's like a key trait to those who are successful.
Well, I think you just leave no stone unturned and you just embrace the idea of being obsessed, and you don't feel guilty about it, and you don't ever wonder or worry if you're doing too much. I mean, I'm obviously physically you can do too much if you feel like, well, I keep working out, I'm getting hurt all the time. I'm not talking about that, but I even want to use you as an example in this. Is, you know, our TennisCon coaches, the people who are presenters and coaches at TennisCon, they are for the most part obsessed with what they do. I'm always looking on Instagram and seeing you interviewing somebody else where you have the Tennis Summit. Well, all throughout the year, you're interviewing all these really great coaches. You took it a challenge a couple of years ago to get in better shape. And I made a joke to you today. I sent a text. I said, I don't like your video you sent in this year because you look younger and fitter and have more hair than last year. You know, so like, and so it's that really is so important, I think, is the idea of always keeping that hunger, never feeling satisfied, but not in a frustrated way. Like always going, what is next? I can't wait to see what's next. What can I do? What else can I learn? And the idea of, to me, oh, I've seen it all, I've heard it all in tennis. I mean, what else are you going to tell me that I already know? You know, that to me is a limited mindset. And a lot of people who think that way, from what I've noticed, they get to a certain level and then they plateau, and then they're willing to hear an idea here and there, get kind of engaged here and there, but then something usually is a roadblock to where they either just stop learning or stop going to the practice court, or they're trying a new idea to implement in their game. They try it for a little bit. Oh, that's not going to work for me. And those are the people that stay stuck.
Yeah. And I have some follow-ups that I jotted down here. So I guess, first of all, how do you kind of balance out like obsession with maybe getting to be like too much or like unhealthy or stressful? Like what's the key to that sort of balance?
Well, another guy that I want to talk about is Milan, who is with 10 Fit Men. Mm-hmm. And he has now worked out for close to 1,000 days. You can look at his Instagram. I think he's up to like day 982 in a row or something like that.
He's
so not only is he working out,
yeah,
but the time it takes to then make sure making a video, editing the video, posting it, that's another you know, set of obsession, dedication, persistence, consistency. And he talked about that, you know, he used to play on the tour a bit. He has been a practice partner to Djokovic. I've seen him hitting with one of the Bryan brothers. I mean, he's a very high-level player. And right now, he's not on the tour. He's coaching. But he wants to be fit and ready if he ever gets that call. He doesn't want to go, well, I'll get ready if I get the call. No, he wants to be ready from day one. But he says the biggest reason that he does it is not for the likes on Instagram. It's not even to get the call. It's that inner drive. It's that idea that I'm proud of myself, that I've done it again, that I showed up again. And he said that, you know, he doesn't know when the streak is going to end. He wants the streak to just keep going. Because I asked him, when is the streak going to end? He says, I just want to keep going and going. And that, to me, really crystallizes what being obsessed and being dedicated and just enjoying the process. And here's another thing about enjoying the process. Enjoying the process doesn't mean that you're always in love or happy about what you're doing, because he said that most days, which is incredible, if you think about a guy who's gone 982 days in a row, he goes, most days I don't want to do the workout. That shocked me. He's like, most days I don't feel like doing it. And if you've ever seen the guy, he's certainly fit enough to where he could skip a day, a week, a month, and still look ripped. So, but he said, but once I start and I get in it, I just get so happy that I'm doing it, almost to the point where it like brings tears of joy, he said. And when he's done, the high that he has, and he says, and that was his message to everybody. He's like, you know, when you do something, you know, even if it's something you don't want to do, but when you do it, after you're done, you never regret that you actually did it.
Yeah, I love that. And you made me think about David Goggins, who you might have heard of. He has this book called Can't Hurt Me. And I see him, he's on Instagram, and he has like the most hilarious, stories and videos. But, you know, not safe for work. It could be some of those. But yeah, he does things that he hates. Like he actually hates running. And that's like his primary exercise that he does every day for like so many miles. And he's ran like ultra marathons, things like that. And he also will do other things that he hates too, like diving in water, like because he's always hated swimming, but he did it, you know, as part of being like the Navy Buds program. And yeah, you know, I think it's just kind of training your mind as well, because a lot of times the mind controls us and we just do things habitually, like automatically, and we seek comfort. But you know, he does that those sorts of things that he hates so that he can retain control of himself. And so I just draw some parallels with Milan here, where he says that he hates working out, but he's doing it just to, you know, show himself that he has that mental toughness to do things that he necessarily doesn't want to do, or that he's fighting, you know, the creature comfort sort of thing. You know, a lot of times when we fight through it, like Milan has that great feeling of accomplishment. So that's really like a big thing. I'm curious though, kind of to dive a little bit deeper into Milan's whole thing. And I don't know if you know the answer to this, but like, how could he work out, you know, close to 1,000 days in a row without any sort of like, you know, injuries or anything like that? Is he given any insight into like, is he kind of having rest days where he does like minimal workouts? Because that's obviously something that, you know, people talk about a lot in terms of balance as well.
Well, I think when you're, I mean, he's a pretty high level athlete. Like, if you guys don't know who I'm talking about, go to Instagram and look him up. 10 Fit Men. Milan, yeah. You'll see him. He's got like a beard and he's ripped. And from what I can understand is I don't think he takes too many easy days. He doesn't take too many short days. But again, I think what allows him to do this, of course, he is younger. I mean, you're still pretty young, but you know, not everybody can work out as much as Milan. I'm not saying I'm using him as an example as mental toughness, but he's in an age where he can do it and he leaves no stone unturned. Like, it's not like every single workout all he does is just like jump up and down, do 100 kangaroo jumps and kill his body. He also does does everything. He's very, very flexible. Yeah, he's very explosive. He takes care of his entire body. And he eats right. So when you get in the habit of doing all the right things besides just doing a hard workout, you can work out every day. His body's gotten used to it. His body is kind of past the soreness. Not to say that he never gets up and feels sore or there's nagging things. I'm sure he has that. But also, high-level athletes can tell the difference between pain that's a soreness and pain that is an illness, an injury, I meant to say, that, you know, like, well, if I keep doing this, then, you know, I'm not going to be able to play anymore. So I think he knows that. And thank goodness he hasn't run into an actual injury that I know of.
Yeah. Good stuff. So more an obsession. I mean, and this, you know, this happens with me all the time. Like a lot of people, like, how do you deal with the laziness factor? Because, like, you know, you can have an obsession, or maybe you develop one, you know, for a little bit, but then there's all these like roadblocks, and like, obviously, like we talked about earlier, like, you know, your mind wants you to do things that are comfortable. So let's say, you know, you're obsessed with like improving your serve, but then, you know, maybe you try a new technique and then it doesn't pan out, and then like your favorite TV shows like on and you just want to watch that instead of train. Like, how do you kind of battle with that that conflict?
Well, another great presenter that's been part of TennisCon, been a part of the Tennis Summit, we've both been so lucky to have him multiple times, is Rick Macy. And So when I hear you say that, I think it's about drinking your own Kool-Aid. You know, like Rick Macy has come up with all these lines. Persistence is undefeated, you know, a run for every ball. And he's always positive. He tells me that he loves getting up at 4 a.m. and getting to the court and teaching from 6:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day, a guy who's in his 60s. He tells me he loves to do it every day. And he has definitely trained his mind to where it's not like he's blowing smoke up his, you know what, he actually bought in to his own propaganda. So, I mean, I don't know if you can call it propaganda or not, but what I'm saying is he's come up with all these mantras that he believes in, that he also lives. And I think that is important, because if you have this where you're like, you have these beliefs, and then you just really keep reminding yourself and reminding everybody about these beliefs, you can then deal with adversity. It's not like he says that, you know, there's no adversity in what he does and that it's not hard what he does, but he's grateful for being able to do it every day and he doesn't take it for granted. And I think that's another thing. It's really easy as a tennis player, because it is a tough sport, to start to have a pity party going, you know, oh, well, you know, I'm trying really hard, but you know, I'm still stuck at the same level. I've been trying to change my serve, but it's still the same. You know, I've been trying to beat this player, but I still lose to him or her. And it's easy to kind of do that and go, you know, well, I'm just not going to put as much time in, or I'm going to give up, or I'm going to go play pickleball, right?
Ah.
So it's easy to do all that. But if you then start to remind yourself, well, why did I start this game in the beginning? Well, I just love tennis. I love the way it looks. I love the way the ball sounds. Every day, I the place where I live, I just absolutely love the weather that I get to play in, or I love the club that I belong to, or my coach is so cool, or I love learning from these online instructors. Like, keep reminding yourself of all the grateful things that you have associated and tied with tennis. You know, and you got to remind yourself how good you really have it. Yesterday, I watched a video on the five worst jobs in the world are most dangerous. And there are so many of them where people are literally working around acid and covering, carrying hundreds of pounds of sulfur on their back every day, which is not only hard to do, but life-threatening, and climbing up in trees and getting acai berries for everybody to have their nice smoothie. Like, and they're getting paid like $17 a day. And so if you're on a little bit of a losing streak, or you can't fix your serve in a month, you know, you really don't have, it's perspective.
Yeah. That's a great technique as well. Peter, you know, when I'm on the court and I'm having a rough time, sometimes I think about how lucky I am to just play the beautiful sport of tennis and, just be out here and, you know, have all my limbs, knock on wood, and things like that. And so, yeah, the perspective is a big, big part of it, for sure. And, you know, I want to ask you too, like, about Tennis Con. Are there any other, I'm curious, like, presentations maybe in like the mental game realm that you think are pretty interesting, if you want to like dive into any of those?
Well, yeah, actually, I'm getting ready to interview Jeff Greenwald. Again,
oh yeah.
What I love about these people is, you know, so many of them are very high achieving. Everybody is, not some of every single one, but you can relate to them as people. You know, they're not getting paid millions of dollars to play, but they have a motivation to still do it at a very high level. Jeff Greenwald's one of the best players over 50 in the entire world, the entire world, and he's going to talk about how to play fearless tennis, building your mental toughness. But here's the cool thing that he's going to do this year that I find really exciting. He's going to train us how we can actually measure if we're getting better at our mental toughness aspect. So we haven't done that interview yet. We're going to probably do it tomorrow. And I'm really excited about that, because I'm like, oh, that's a new angle. How do you actually measure mental toughness? It's easy to kind of measure a serve, like, oh, I made 7 out of 10 serves, you know, I made this percentage of serves in my matches, or I'm able to rally 15 times in a row cross court. You can measure that, but how do you measure mental toughness? And it's, you know, you can always say, well, I won my match, I must have been mentally tough, or I lost my match, I must have been mentally weak. No, you can win a match and be a mental mess, and you can lose a match. I remember just for myself that this, you know, that's how much I love tennis. It brings back all these great flashbacks. One match I'm most proud of is when I was in a junior tennis, and I was just moving up the ranks. And I played this one guy who was number one in the state, and I lost in three sets. And the time before I played him, he just destroyed me. Then I lost in three sets, and it was so close. It was such a fun match. He was such a great guy too. I jumped over the net to shake his hand, and I lost.
Wow.
But you know what? The next time I beat him, and I never lost to him again.
Boom. But,
yeah, boom. Booyah. But yeah, I was the most excited about that loss, because I knew I had performed at a level that I never did before.
Love that. Yeah, that is such an interesting question to explore, which, I mean, obviously, Jeff will give you the answer to. But, I was trying to think about the answer to that. And, like, it maybe be interesting to compare his answer with mine. But him, you know, obviously, Jeff has way more expertise than I do on the mental game. But, you know, I think I would probably, like, measure, I would define what is a pressure point. And then I would analyze like the performance on those pressure points. And I might even maybe give my opponents ratings as well to like have a baseline of like you, how well you performed against another person relative to how well they perform under pressure. And obviously this all takes so much tracking. I mean, maybe like on the pro tour, they have, you know, they could go back to video and do it, but like playing as an amateur, it would be kind of tough unless you record every single match, but then you wouldn't have necessarily a recordings of the opponent and how they perform for that rating. Hopefully that wasn't too confusing, but yeah, that's a really interesting question. I mean, have you formulated any sort of thought on that?
Here's what I would do. I'd measure how many times I threw my racket, how many curse words I said, how embarrassed I am on a scale of 1 to 10, leaving the club as people watch me walk out.
And the more the better, right? So you must be like super high rank, bro.
I have walked out of some clubs in my life embarrassed. So.
Yeah, so have I. You know, that's another thing too. Like I used to, in juniors, probably until I think the 16s maybe, I would always be thinking about like, oh my gosh, so I'm playing X. And, you know, there's like five people here that know how good X is or how bad they are. So if I lose to X, then I'm going to look like a clown. And like, I just let all that pressure pile into me, you know, or like, oh, this guy's closely ranked to me. And like, I'm really scared to play him. Like, I don't know. There's so many like external things that I don't let affect me as much or at all. But yeah, the mental game, man, it's very interesting.
It's crazy. It's crazy in tennis.
Yeah, it definitely is. Definitely is.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I guess what other thing that we were talking before I hit the record button here was like the lack of time excuse that people have. So like, how do you go about that? Because, you know, obviously, you know, as you mentioned, there are people, of course, who, you know, their parents, they have jobs or doing other things. So like, how does that work?
Well, I have a couple of different thoughts on it. You know, like I like to come up with this idea of, you know, if you want to get to another level as a tennis player, and certainly we're not pros, we don't have the amount of coaches, the amount of income, you know, everything right. that the pros have at their disposal to train all day, and that's their job. But I do think that you should practice like a mini pro, like, you know, like mini pro practices to where so many people just go out, they hit some balls sometimes, and then they play their matches and then rinse and repeat. And then they're staying at the same level where professional athletes, they're always practicing in a closed to an open environment. And so what does that mean? That means that a closed environment would be Steph Curry, you know, doing his dribbling exercises by himself before each and every game. That's closed, right? He's in control of that. A closed environment where you can find videos of Denis Shapovalov getting the ball fed underhand to him and then hitting a perfect looking backhand. You know, watching so many videos, especially one thing that is really cool in this day of social media is seeing so many of the players practice. I just saw Garbine Muguruza, I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Muguruza. Yeah.
Muguruza. She was on her Instagram, and it was cold too. It was kind of cool. She was doing this workout, and she was doing these shadow strokes, and the person had like a band holding her. So she had a lot of resistance run out and hit shadow strokes. You know, those are all closed practices, and they're so important to really get down your technique and create perfection. But it's also then important to open up chapters in a book and challenge yourself more with rallies and then counting how many you can make in a row, to then playing points, to also maybe having a little bit of a punishment if you don't reach your goal, so you know what it feels, what pressure feels like. And which I have a good one if you can remind me after that. And then ultimately playing your matches and rinse and repeating. That's how you can do that. And you can find the time to do that like the pros. And if you say that you can't find the time, there's a guy named Brent Abel who's part of Tennis Con, and he started playing tennis when he was 35. Okay. Mm. Then he became a coach, a tennis coach. That's how obsessed he became with it. He started playing when he was 35. Then he became a coach. And then most people who become a coach, once they start coaching, they're like, I don't have any darn time to hit a tennis ball. A tennis ball is the last thing I want to do when the day is over. But he got so in the competition that he won 11 gold balls after starting at age 35. And I gave him that same thing. I'm like, yeah, but you know, so many people say that they don't have time to improve a weakness. They just don't have the time to dedicate to it. And he said, look, I always found the time. He's like, I had a kid. I was working on the court all day. It's just like, you can't say you're obsessed with something and that you want to get better and then come right out with the next sentence and say you don't have the time to do it.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, obviously I probably have more time than others being, you know, not married or anything, but there's, you know, I'm pretty busy and things like that. But like, I've done like a time audit before, and like, and you can even just look at your phone as well, you know, see how much time you spend on apps. Like, you know, okay, what did I do, you know, on Monday and Tuesday? And like, oh, wow, actually I watched like an hour and a half of YouTube. I watched like a show for an hour. And then you're going to find all these pockets of time. So I think more likely than not, you know, the people who say that they don't have time, it is, you know, somewhat of an excuse, you know, unfortunately, you have to admit, and that, you know, you can always like curtail certain things, delete them from your schedule. And, you know, if you really want to do something, do it. You know, I find like there's certain projects that I have to do for Tennis Files, for example, where that are so important that even if I'm super busy, like I make the time, like it has to happen, and it happens. So really good point there, Pete. And you told me to remind you about, like, was it a pressure game example you said that you were talking about? Okay.
Yeah, so here's one I just did at my last camp. Okay, we were working on the serve. And one thing that was interesting is I had them warm up a basket. Now everybody's, you know, by the end of the basket, they're making most of their serves. And that was pretty good. So there's four people. And then what I had was I set up a target, and it was two people had to face off against each other and serve. And the one who made it got to stay in and challenge another person and get a point. And what ended up happening was that all of a sudden, even the best player, who is a 4-0 plus player, I'd say, and the weakest player was probably a 3-0 plus player, no one all of a sudden could make one serve. Because we add a little bit of pressure. And what's another thing we did? We also added time. You know, when you're practicing a basket of serves. So this is, again, another thing I challenge people to do. You practice a basket of serves, you can get in a pretty good rhythm by the end of the basket, but it's not at all realistic to a match to where you're playing one point, then the point ends, then you got to go walk back to the fence, get a ball, go and serve again. So you're realistically serving probably every 30 to 50 seconds, which is about the time that it took people to come up and serve. But that wait time, and then watching your peers serve, and then seeing your peers get nervous, and then the coach is watching. All of a sudden, that's a lot of pressure in a very simple drill. And they couldn't really get used to executing until they got over the idea that, okay, this drill isn't going away. I got to figure out a way to settle my mind down. So I think in the first couple of minutes, it wasn't even worth giving a technical tip, because when you get so nervous and you're not comfortable with something, you start to feel stuff in your body to where you almost don't even feel in touch with your own body. So you've got to put yourself under pressure situations, get used to that. And then once you get used to that, then your body can be receptive to like one word tips, where if you're so nervous, it doesn't matter how many tips you give yourself, because your body can't even, you know, the brain and the body are just not even talking to each other.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that reminded me. I recently was looking at some past summit sessions, and you know, Jorge Capistani is a great coach. I'm sure he's on TennisCon, but he has some really good pressure games. So those are great. But yeah, anyways, what other question that I had too, when you mentioned about how, like, you know, us as club level players, like we're not like the pros where we're like playing for tons of money and like grand slams. Just kind of like basic question, like, why do you think we should then even strive for improvement? You know, like if, you know, because some might think like, well, you know, I'm not going to win money, like I'm not going to be at the highest level. So why even improve?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think because so many people who are watching and listening to your podcast and listening to TennisCon and going online, they want to learn a certain way. They want to learn the art of tennis. It's not just about winning and losing, but then when you get into a match, it becomes all about winning and losing. So you got to keep reminding yourself, what do you like about tennis? And I remember and you were probably the same way since you were a high-level junior player and played college tennis, is besides the winning and losing, it's enjoying the art of the game, the style of the game, learning a new skill.
Yeah.
Like you have to make that just as enjoyable, if not more enjoyable than winning a match. Cause I find what ends up happening was you're like, get excited to learn something new. Then it doesn't work in a match. And then you're like, well, I don't want to do it anymore. Cause that was humiliating. I went out and tried my new shot. It completely fell apart. So it's that inner satisfaction of the things that you want to get and to realize that you just can't watch a video and get excited and then earn the right to then own and master that skill. It takes a long time to master that skill. And so if you really do want to master it, you know, you got to have more of that growth mindset, be patient and enjoy the process and the small victories, which isn't always easy to do.
Yeah, no, definitely. A lot of things that, you know, come from tennis, like even if you're not winning at the highest levels, is just kind of getting used to like self-improvement. You know, like it's kind of like a habit. If you're the type that's like always problem solving and trying to improve your game and staying level-headed, as you do need to be in tennis, like that transfers over to other aspects of your life. And then of course, you know, winning feels really good a lot of times, and yeah, just knowing that you're just progressing in life through tennis, and also, you know, it's so healthy. So those are some of the great rewards.
You made a great point, one that I've been thinking more and more about, because it doesn't matter how good your strokes look or what level you are at, because ultimately you're going to be playing people at your level. So whether you're a 3-0, a 5-0 on the tour, you know, you're going to face somebody as well as yourself, who's going to present problems. And we always dream of going out there and playing in the zone. We're always looking to play in the zone, right? And we always want to win 6-0, 6-0, but that rarely happens. Most of the time, most days, we're going to be presented with problems. And the more that you embrace the idea and get excited about that tennis is the ultimate problem-solving sport, you know, you're out there by yourself or you're with one other partner, and, you know, a lot of things can fall apart. Your strokes can fall apart. Your opponents can be playing great. The wind can be there. The sun can be there. There's always different problems on every single day that you play. And the more that you kind of start to get excited about it, you know, like, oh, wow, you know, like the sun's in my face today. How am I going to actually still figure out a way to get in the box? You know, things like that. The more you look at the game like that, you're going to enjoy it. Look for the problems. They're going to show up. And then be excited when you see one come up and go, okay, this is a cool challenge to see how I can respond to this.
Yeah. What is the number one killer or roadblock to obsession? And then how do you deal with that?
I think one of the things that is, and you have to have it because you have to know who to play with and who to play against. But I really think that the rating system is a growth killer. Because
see my shirt here, USTA League, USTA League.
it's a growth killer because number one, you can start to label yourself. You can start to say, "I'm a 3.5, I'm a 3.5, I'm a 3.5." Mm-hmm. You're after
identity.
Year and say, I'm a 3.5,
right?
You know, well, how good are you? I'm a 3.5, right? And so that can get into your head. You just start to think, "Well, I'm just a 3.5." And to get to a 4.0 just seems, and it is a big mountain to climb, but it can certainly be done. But it really shouldn't be about just having that number behind your name as far as how good or bad you're getting. And I think that that is the biggest obstacle, is that you start to label yourself who you are, and then you look at the next level and you're like, well, I want to be a 4.0. I want to get that letter in the mail from USTA that says I'm a 4.0, and that will validate all the hard work I'm putting in. And then when you don't get it, it becomes frustrating. And then you're like, gosh, forget this. I'm tired of beating my head against the wall. And so I think if you, again, just look at, okay, I want to get better. I've been a 3.5. And this is one of the bonuses that I actually give in TennisCon 6 as a bonus. I have how to win at your level, singles and doubles edition, and how to get to the next level, singles and doubles edition. So, you know, one of the clear delineations I find from 3.5 to 4.0 is all of a sudden, you know, you're not going to see many people at middle of the road 4.0 to pushing to 4.5 that have, you know, the hammer grip and the waiter tray. They're going to have a serve that, of course, it's not Roger Federer's serve, but it's somewhere in the ballpark of looking like a professional serve. Those are the people that play that level. So you got to start to go, okay, well, if I want to get to that level, I've got to embrace the learning process of actually learning how to do that, and not to put a rush on it. Like, I've got to get it done in 6 months so then I can get bumped up to a 4.0, because it's not going to happen in 6 months. And you have to be mature enough to understand that when a kid, lots of people think kids developed faster and improve faster than adults. I absolutely don't believe that. But it's the expectation that, you know, Johnny starts learning how to hit a real serve when he's 10. And by the time he's 13, it looks pretty good. And it's starting to look like a real serve. And by the time he's 15, it's actually a weapon. And that's 5 years. But most adults think like, well, shoot, if I can't get this done in 6 months, I must be a loser, you know? And are you really, really working on it? Absolutely. For 6 months, are you going back and forth? You know, you've got to, in your practices, just practice one way and practice in progressions if you want to get it. You can still go out and play your matches. In fact, I recommend you play your matches with the old way, the way that you're used to, the way you know you get that ball in the box. But then you've got to really tie those practice sessions close together after your matches of practicing the new way, so that it starts to feel better and better and better, and the old way feels worse and worse and worse. And it can happen, because just yesterday in my private lesson on Sunday, this one woman, she had no concept of how to hit her spin serve. So we were working on that. In the beginning, one was spin, one was flat, spin, flat, hard, you know, going down the tee, out wide. And I said, I just want you curving it to where it's slicing towards, you know, to the sideline. And then we did a couple of feel drills to where she started to feel it. She liked it. And then more and more, she could see the ball doing what we talked about. And then like 5 minutes later, she hit one that was flat again. And right away, rather than me going, which I had to in the beginning, saying, that's not it, that didn't have enough spin, she goes, oh, that's not it. Like that wasn't it. Like, she could already feel that was the foreign one. That was the bad one in the patch that we got to throw out. So, you know, the more you do stuff like that, you can actually, you know, learn and progress a lot. But she progressed a lot yesterday. The million-dollar question is she on the court today doing that same drill? If she is, she can get better. If she comes back next week to me and she hasn't done it once, we're starting right back where we left off.
Yeah, love that. Love that. And very impressed, Pete. You use the word delineations. I think that's like the highest level word I've heard you use during all our interviews.
That's the only smart word I know.
It's a good word. It's a good word. Peter, you know, as I mentioned, you know, I'm just like so excited for TennisCon 6. And I was wondering, you know, if you could give us like any other insights into some of the other, you know, presentations and things that that'll be going on, or anything else interesting.
All right, so I'm really excited because this year is again amazing. We've got, just think about this, first two presentations. I mean, they're not going to be the first two on the day, but you got 17-time Grand Slam champion. Who am I going to say?
Gigi Fernandez.
We have her, but I was going to say Mark Woodford.
Oh,
so we've got, for now it's 34.
34.
Just in two presentations.
Damn.
So Mark Woodford's part of TennisCon 6, which we're excited about.
That's
we're
awesome.
Going to talk about how to play with any partner, which is, you know, very challenging because everybody's on leagues and is always playing with all these different personalities, which is tough. Sometimes you're the strong link. Sometimes you're the weak link. So, you know, all kinds of, but he has a unique ability to make people feel comfortable right away. And we talk about that. And Gigi Fernandez is part of it. You're part of it, which is great. You talk about the five biggest singles mistakes. Then we have Ryan Reedy, who might be the fastest growing YouTuber tennis coach. And I think he's like killing it on TikTok. He's killing it all over. I don't know how the guy does it. He's obsessed. That's how he does it.
That's exactly.
And he's going to go over the five biggest doubles mistakes. We've got Will from Fuzzy Yellow Balls, who works with the Bryan brothers, and Gigi and Pat Rafter and everybody. Ian from Essential Tennis, who's closing in on 300,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Hurricane
we've got
Ian.
Top Tennis Training, who might even have more subscribers than Ian. And I think they're over 300,000. And Alex, if you don't know who he is, he was a practice partner to Roger Federer at the year-end championships. And that's just scratching the surface. It just starts to get obnoxious if I keep going. But those are just a few.
I want you to name all 40 right now. No, I'm kidding. But yeah,
Could do it. I probably
no,
could.
No, you,
but
you probably
I don't
could.
Think you want to listen to it.
Ah, yeah. Well, they'll see it. They'll definitely see it when they go to tennisfiles.com/tenniscon6. So TennisCon6. Really excited for it, Pete. Yeah, can you give us give us the dates as well and any other activities?
Yeah, so by the time you're seeing this, you can probably get your free ticket. Mm-hmm. If you do decide to upgrade to lifetime access, already inside the membership, I have the six big bonuses, which are winning at your level, singles and doubles, getting to the next level, singles and doubles. The audio recordings will be there, but they're not there yet. And then the sixth one is going to be the VIP hotline where you can ask me questions and send in videos. So, but your singles and doubles bonuses are already in the membership. We're going to keep putting more and more videos in there. The videos will start to appear on Monday, October 17th. That's when we have our first official day releasing the TennisCon 6 lessons.
Awesome. Awesome. And once again, you know, I like to highlight this with Peter. I mean, Peter is, it's incredible, like how Peter gives, like, you know, I mean, all those bonuses are awesome, but like the one where you can send in videos, like I've seen instructors like charge a ton of money to send in a video to be analyzed. And that's going to be one of the bonuses if you pick up TennisCon 6, which just by itself is worth, you know, 20-30x, I don't know, like a ton more than like what the price is, just being totally honest, because I mean, I can tell you, like, going back through TennisCon 6 and seeing like so many fantastic like technique tips and like workouts and strategy tips, like that makes such a huge difference. If you're an obsessed player, you definitely want to pick up the all access pass to TennisCon 6. So, and yeah, I mean, again, like I can't wait to check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. And anything else you want to let us know about TennisCon? Maybe there's going to be some like really cool people like doing live streams and such.
We're going to do the kickoff party, which is going to be great. We're doing the kickoff party on Sunday, October 16th, and then you're going to come on a couple times, and Gigi's probably going to do a one with us, so that's awesome. Going to be pretty cool.
Nice.
And
cool.
Yeah.
Cool, so man.
We got a lot. Cool. Jeff Salenstein's going to do a live stream. Nice. He's former top 100 ATP pro.
Yeah. I love the live streams. They're so much fun. Obviously, a lot of work on your end, but they really bring out the engagement. So I can't wait for those as well. It's so great to do live streams with, like, you know, people like commenting and things. And yeah, so can't wait to do that, Peter. So I just want to ask you one more question. Actually, well, two more questions. One is, is there anything else? I lied, sorry. Is there anything else that maybe I did not cover or ask you about that you just want to mention? You know, I just like to give guests the floor nowadays before I continue.
Oh, that's very nice of you. I don't think so, guys. I really think we covered a lot, and I don't really have much more to add. So, no.
Okay. Excellent.
I hope they enjoyed it. I hope they learned at least one or two things out of today.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Very, very motivating and, you know, fun chat. And, you know, I just can't wait to keep chatting with you and doing live streams and, you know, us collaborating on content and more in the future for sure. And hopefully seeing you in person again one of these days. It was really cool to see you at the City Open, you know, a couple months ago. But last question for you.
Marathon, by the way, guys.
Sure.
Better looking in person.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. So you too, actually. To be honest, like, not just, you know, returning the favor and whatnot, but like, you look like you're in good shape. And yeah, I don't know. I was just so excited to see you, man. So it was good. We got to do more than one day next time. But yeah. So my last question for you is, what is one key tip that you can give our audience to help them become a more obsessed tennis player?
Oh my gosh. Well, here's one key tip. Just go on YouTube every day and watch Federer highlights now that he's retired.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think if you can't get inspired watching Roger Federer highlights,
yeah,
and all the amazing passion he's brought to the game, then tennis is probably not the sport that you like.
That's a very, very unique and good one. And yeah, obviously pretty sad. You know, I was watching Federer's last match at Laver Cup, like after my mixed doubles match, I believe it was at sectionals in Virginia. And it was tough. I remember going to the hotel after that and then like rewatching like the more emotional parts and the speeches and just like, you know, shedding a tear or two, I'll have to say.
I don't think anybody didn't. How I learned about that, and then we'll let everybody go, is so I was teaching a camp all weekend, so I couldn't watch Laver Cup like I wanted to.
Yeah.
And then one of my students who actually came to he's come to three or four of my camps now. This guy is great. His name is Bashkar, and he loves Federer. And he sent me a text that that he was crying and that he couldn't watch it anymore.
Oh God!
And so I called him, you know, and kind of calmed him down and everything. He was really quite. I mean, he loves tennis, and we started to play tennis after he lost his dad with COVID, and that.
Wow!
Yeah, so tennis means a lot to him, and Federer means a lot to him. Mm. And then he went out and he went to the court and he practiced his serve. And then he sent me a video of his serve to analyze. So, you know, that was pretty cool. But,
yeah, very, very special, very, special player, and, you're doing special things, Peter. So thank you for, you know, for just generally your service to tennis. And, again, TennisCon, can't wait. Go to tennisfiles.com/tenniscon6. The link will be in the show notes page, and you can check it out at tennisfiles.com/podcast for this podcast and all the other ones. So yeah, sign up for TennisCon. It's going to be a blast, and we'll see you all there. And Pete, thanks again for taking the time to be on the show. Talk to you soon. All right. I really hope that you enjoyed my interview with Coach Peter Freeman. Pete, as always, thanks so much for coming onto the show. It was a ton of fun. And if you enjoyed this interview, would really appreciate a review if you could leave one at tennisfiles.com/Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app that you use to listen to the show. And also really, really want to highly encourage you once more to register to TennisCon 6. And you can do that at tennisfiles.com/TennisCon6.
and it starts on October 17th. So hopefully you're listening to this before then. You can grab your free ticket to watch all the presentations. And then if you'd like to, upgrade to the All Access Pass to get lifetime access to all the videos, plus some really fantastic bonuses. And yeah, just looking at the roster here, it's crazy good. I mean, you've got, you know, 17-time Grand Slam champions, Gigi Fernandez and Mark Woodford, mainstays in the online tennis world like Ian from Essential Tennis, Will Hamilton from Fuzzy Yellow Balls, Cruz Sell, who's a former 400 ATP pro, top 400 rather, Scott and Nate from Player Court, Alex and Simon from Top Tennis Training, Ryan from 2 Minute Tennis. So yeah, just a really great lineup. So I'm definitely looking forward to watching it. As you know, I am one that loves, you know, learning and improving my game and sharing it with you all. So this is, you know, one of the biggest events that I always look forward to each year. So yeah, tennisfiles.com/tenniscon6. And I also want to leave you with a quote, as I often do at the end of the show. And this one is by Stephen Hawking. And Stephen said, "However difficult life may seem, there is always something you can do and succeed at." Love that quote by Mr. Hawking. So with that, thanks so much for listening. And we've got some really fun interviews coming down the pike for you all that have been recorded. So I can't wait to share them with you. And yeah, with that, have a fantastic week. Stay dry over here. It's been raining quite a bit. And, you know, stay safe, especially in you're in the south of the United States, such as Florida and, you know, Georgia and such. I know that obviously it's been really crazy down there. So best wishes to you all. And fortunately, I've contacted some of my tennis friends down there. I have a couple in Tampa and, you know, they're doing all right. So that's great to hear. So, all right, with that, thanks so much for listening. And I'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. This is your host, Mirvan Aranshad. Signing out.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.